And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our drama today, The Ghost Who Sits in Parliament, was written by Howard Merrill.
Whether it be the black hills of the Dakotas or the parched plains of the Middle East, there is a way of nature the farmer speaks of in thoughtful sorrow. The good things are a long time coming, he will say. The seed must be wind-borne or ocean-borne to a place where it may grow. The embryo must germinate in hospitable soil, while time, with a curiously delicate and deliberate chemistry, turns the seed to blossom. The good things are a long time coming, secured for the present by certain generous persons of the past. Certain names of the past, many of them obscure. One, Ezekiel Hart, for instance, a Canadian who in the year 1808 was elected to the Canadian Parliament and so traveled to Quebec, which was then the seat of government. One winter evening early in that year, Hart stood utterly alone in the huge, dark, deserted halls of Parliament. At least he thought he was alone.
Ezekiel?
What? Who's there?
Esther.
Oh, I didn't see you, dear. I didn't hear you.
When you left the dinner and said you were going for a walk, I told them, I know my husband well. I believe I know where he is going.
So you think me childish?
Not at all. I can well understand.
All these years, Esther, of hoping I might sit in this great hall, helping Canada to grow, playing a vital role in the country's destiny. Now it's true. I could not wait until we convene.
Of course not. I imagine every new member of Parliament is awestruck and eager.
This place is rich, Esther. Rich with legends and memories. I must be worthy of the legacy, Esther.
You will.
I confess I'm like a small boy. I've been counting the days and the hours, planning my opening remarks, if I'm called upon as a new representative.
A good representative is not a tired one. Come home, you must rest. I met your friend, Deputy Richardson. He is outside. He wishes to speak with you.
Oh, excellent. Richardson can be most helpful.
Heed his words, Ezekiel. He is only concerned about your welfare. He has had experience.
You sound worried, Esther. Why?
Because I've been talking with him myself.
What's on his mind?
A disturbing question, Ezekiel.
Ah, Richardson. You are amused, I imagine. I can picture the grin on your face as you waited here in the street. I've been naive, eh? Romantic.
No. Walking north?
Yes.
I shall walk with you. Ezekiel, when the first flush of glory is over and the young member of Parliament is face to face with the facts of politics in this arena, it is often a heartbreaking experience.
You sound as though you'd something definite in your mind.
You will see the noble profession of representing the people converted into a degrading process of backbiting, pandering, betrayal piled upon betrayal.
Well, I've a strong stomach, Richardson, and I believe the strength of my convictions.
Nowhere is the fight between the British and French more horrible than here in Parliament. You have been accused of being pro-British.
Well, how could they make an issue of me? I was properly elected. Frenchmen as well as Englishmen voted for me in the borough. I hope to represent Canada.
Nevertheless, you have enemies in Parliament awaiting your appearance like prowling jungle animals, stalking for the kill.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Ezekiel. The plotters will soon be speaking. The beady-eyed men saying, do as we wish. Dance to the piper's tune. It has been said before to other men of stature. It is always the discordant, brassy answer to men like yourself. So brassy and impudent, its urgency is overwhelming. Will you listen, Ezekiel? On the morning shortly after his arrival in Quebec, Hart stood with his friend Richardson before the clerk of the lower assembly to be sworn in as a member of Parliament.
One moment, my spectacles. There we are. Now the papers attesting to your election. Now the oath. Here's the Bible. Place your left hand upon it. Raise the right hand. Repeat after me.
I beg your pardon.
Yes?
This Bible. This is only the New Testament.
Well, of course it is. Oh, good gracious, Hart. I've no time for idle chatter. Now, come along, get it over with. Place the left...
I should prefer to take the oath of my hand upon the Old Testament, the books of Moses.
What's that?
I
heard what you said, but I don't know what you're talking about.
It's quite simple. You see, I am of the Jewish faith.
You're a Jew?
Yes. I shall repeat the oath exactly as you state it to me, but if it is to have any meaning for me, I must take it in accordance with my own religion.
Most irregular.
Oh, I shouldn't imagine so. A man must take a sacred oath as he believes.
Well, I'll look in the Book of Regulations. Let me see that. It says, on the true faith of a Christian.
I have the same intent. No man may match my loyalty to Parliament, nor to Canada. But if you do not mind, may we proceed as I suggested?
We certainly may not. If it says on the true faith of a Christian, then by George, I must administer it that way. I'm only the clerk, sir. I'm not His Royal Highness or the Governor General. Merely the clerk.
Why should there be any objection to my taking the oath as my conscience dictates?
Conscience, poppycock. You have a great deal to learn, young man. If you wish to succeed here in Parliament, do as you're told. Now, shall we get on with it?
I cannot go on this way.
I quite agree with you, Ezekiel. I am not of your faith, but I am proud of you.
There isn't any choice, young man. Either you take the oath as the regulations prescribe, or you go to your seat in Parliament without the oath. It's not in my hands. Oh, I shall report it, of course. Now, which shall it be?
Well, I can only take the oath as I see fit.
I must warn you, Ezekiel. You've touched on a delicate matter. It may be dangerous to make an issue of it.
My dear Richardson, in all such issues as this, it may be infinitely more dangerous to do nothing.
Faith, a convenient household article handy for this moment, easily dispensable for that? The question is never academic. It has a way of coming alive. It walks the streets. It enters the home. It disturbs the sleep. It may break a man's spirit. It may destroy a man's life. Well, Representative Hart, agreed? Shortly after the incident in the clerk's office, Ezekiel entered the august buildings of Parliament, joined his fellows, and sat quietly in place as the ruling body convened. Pierre Bédard, leader of the French faction, never took his eyes off Hart. Though the gigantic room was bustling with countless men, to Bédard there was just one man in that room, Hart.
Gentlemen of the Lower Assembly, it being of general accord that we proceed with the consideration of major issues at hand.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Bédard.
I call this body's attention to the presence of the representative from Trois-Rivières.
And what point would you make?
The clerk reports that the representative has not taken the required oath.
Mr. Hart.
I am perfectly willing to take the oath, but I cannot take the oath on the true faith of a Christian.
And will you tell the assembly the reason for this astounding attitude?
I am a Jew.
Ezekiel, I beg of you, be cautious. Do not antagonize anyone.
I do not intend to antagonize anyone.
I submit, Monsieur Hart is not qualified to sit in this assembly.
Mr. Hart, will you take the oath as specified upon the New Testament?
I cannot without rejecting my faith.
Does the House ask that I do such a thing?
Will the House admit a member who refuses to take its oath? Have the English stooped so low, lost so much respect for Parliament? Why? Why have the English stopped at this point? Why have they not brought to Parliament heathen Chinese and African blackamoors? Are we to destroy our Christian principles so that the power-hungry English may gain a piddling single vote? Is this their new tactic? Paganism!
Mr. Chairman, Monsieur Bedard speaks with a horrible voice of fanaticism. The voice that drove our ancestors across the North Atlantic to this continent. We are a democratic nation. Any man being properly elected has the unquestionable right to a seat in this House.
Do you mean that the oath of this Jew means anything at all to us or to him?
I assure you, sir, my oath to me is as sacred as yours to you.
The House has but one way to meet this challenge. I move the House resolve that Ezekiel Hart, Esquire, professing the Jewish religion, cannot take a seat, nor sit, nor vote in this House.
I protest. I wish...
Is there a second to my motion?
Second!
Second!
Gentlemen, is this conceivable? That Parliament wishes officially to record the fact that it is opposed to Hart simply because he's Jewish? Is Monsieur Bedard sincere? Or is he simply attempting to stir dissatisfaction, to concoct a witch's brew, and divide the House so the French may assume control?
The motion has been seconded. A vote is in order.
Vote!
I have tried, Ezekiel. It is not too late to retract.
But I cannot believe this. I do not believe they would do this.
It may be much the better part of valor to retract.
I shall not retract.
You may be ruined.
Never. They will never pass the resolution.
The House entertains a resolution by Pierre Bedard that Ezekiel Hart, professing the Jewish religion, cannot take a seat, nor sit, nor vote in this House. Those in favor?
Aye!
Those opposed?
No.
The resolution is adopted. Ezekiel Hart, you will leave this House.
Ezekiel, you all right? You're so pale, trembling.
I'm all right. Thank you.
I'll help you to the door.
I cannot believe it. It happened so quickly. It struck like lightning.
There's your wife. She'll take you home. I shall visit you tonight.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you for everything.
Ezekiel, are you recessing for a few moments? Did you make your speech? How were you received?
Esther.
Tell me. Ezekiel, what has happened?
They do not want me. They voted I should leave the House. It's over, Esther. All over.
And so, for Ezekiel Hart, there was an end before there was a beginning. And so he returned to his home, knowing that with a handful of words, a man may be hurt more than with a whiplash. Knowing a handful of words may reduce something to countless fragments that it has taken a lifetime to construct. And so he felt the weight of a defeat that was a matter of minutes, and a humiliation that was a matter of centuries. And so each night thereafter, Ezekiel would ask,
was I wrong? Esther?
No, Ezekiel.
But my career...
The price of that was the sale of your faith. They wanted you to yield, to bargain away your religion, to take the oath on their terms. But there was more to it than that. Your challenge to their arrogance and their wickedness was the challenge of human freedom. They dare not let it move about in the air of Canada, for it is intoxicating. Oh, why the misgivings, Ezekiel? Why wonder if you were wrong?
Because a man has dreams, Esther. All my life I dreamed of serving. Never did I dream that bigots would bar my way. Such a dream springs into being easily, but it goes down hard.
You shall see. I've do not know how, nor when, nor why, but from what you have sown in Parliament, there will be a splendid harvest.
A year passed, and Hart, the merchant of Three Rivers, became just that again and no more. Until one day, his friend Richardson appeared with a gentleman of the local press.
The editor of the Mercury, Ezekiel.
Oh, how do you do, sir?
How do you do? Mr. Hart, I've come to make a request of you on behalf of my readers, on behalf of the citizens of Three Rivers. You see, sir, I have been through the city, through the province. Your experience has ignited a flame.
Really?
The people are aroused and Parliament begins to reflect their sentiment. A number of the members have announced they regret their vote.
And what is your request?
Mr. Hart, we ask you to run for Parliament again in the very next election.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
But why?
Gentlemen, I've suffered greatly. I've had my fill. But my reasons for refusing are not entirely selfish. I might be willing, were I convinced my effort would accomplish something. But it would only fan the flames of which you speak. That may be as awful as it seems good. My candidacy might create more hatred, violence, not alone for the Jews of Canada, but for all minorities.
Has it ever occurred to you, Mr. Hart, that you have no choice in this matter?
No choice? What do you mean, sir?
Well, I mean, sir, you become a symbol, whether you like it or not. Men and women of all faiths are on your side, Ezekiel, and in Parliament now, too. Will you do it? Will you, sir?
What was it that Esther said?
I do not know how, nor when, nor why, but from what you have sown in Parliament, there will someday be a splendid harvest.
Well, Mr. Hart?
Ezekiel, we know it to be a sacrifice. We'll be subject to ridicule and venom. But beyond that, your election and acceptance will be a greater victory, with dimensions larger than those you think you see. Will you accept?
Yes, gentlemen. I am a candidate.
A campaign was fought by Ezekiel Hart, and the campaign was won. He returned to the Quebec that had rejected him, to the seat from which he had been ousted. But once more, as he sat, the hypnotic glare of Pierre Bedard was fixed upon him to the exclusion of anyone else in the hall. Once more, Bedard rose before the assembled multitude. Once more, he spoke.
The clerk informs me, Monsieur Hart, that you have again refused to take the oath on the true faith of a Christian.
That is correct. I shall continue to refuse. I shall continue to stand upon my rights, not only as a Jew, but as a Canadian subject who is entitled to worship as he pleases. I am prepared to take the oath upon the books of Moses.
You try the patience of this body, Monsieur Hart. You sprout again like an ugly weed in the gardens of government.
I have been returned to this body legally by a majority of the voters of my borough.
Indeed, monsieur. Eh bien alors. Then this disease you bring must be purged forever from Parliament. I hereby move the House resolve that no Jew ever be seated or vote in the lower assembly.
We are stronger this time, Ezekiel. Much of Parliament has realized what this means. Let it go to a vote. Be silent.
As you say, Richardson.
It has been moved that no Jew may ever again be seated nor vote in this House. Those in favor?
Aye!
Opposed?
No!
The resolution is adopted.
Richardson, it's just as I feared, just as I always feared. I have compounded the evil. I should never have listened to you, not to my wife, nor to anyone but myself. I was right, I was terribly right. I have not disgraced myself alone now, but so many others for all the future. My name will live in infamy, as it should, Richardson. As it should.
An odd story, perhaps, with no sudden, inspiring reversal of fortune for its hero, but two crushing defeats, and then oblivion. Ezekiel Hart thought he had looked upon the face of final disaster. He thought his name would be memorized shamefully for as long as Canada stood. But years later, in March of 1831, his old friend Richardson came to the home of Ezekiel Hart with a message.
I have just come from Quebec. Ezekiel, there is news, magnificent news.
Eh? What is it?
They've passed the bill.
What bill?
Haven't you heard? They've been considering it for weeks. A bill to grant full civil rights to the Jews, declaring them entitled to every right enjoyed by all subjects. Parliament has passed it, Ezekiel.
But why do you shake my hand?
Because in Quebec today, your name is on everyone's lips. It was you, Ezekiel. You began it. It was your courage, your patience, your refusing to yield. You thought your case was forgotten, eh? It's been in the back of people's minds always. I've told you that. But you would sigh and shrug and retire to a corner.
Ezekiel, have you heard? Have you heard?
Yes, Esther.
You won out in the House. Not Bedar, not the hate mongers. Your two defeats were two victories.
It was so long ago, I hardly feel responsible.
But you were responsible. You brought it all to light. If you'd surrendered then, there would be nothing to celebrate now. This, Ezekiel, this is what I predicted. This is your splendid harvest.
A few nights later, in the huge, dark, and deserted halls of Parliament, Ezekiel Hart stood alone. At least he thought he was alone.
Ezekiel?
Huh? Oh. Esther.
I knew you'd come back. Just as I knew it years and years ago.
I'm back only as a visitor. Not sitting as a delegate.
You do sit here in Parliament, Ezekiel. In a sense, you have been sitting here since that first clear sunlit day when you walked up the stone steps, the new delegate from Three Rivers. You were never more present than when they passed that bill for equal rights just the other day. And you will always be present. As long as these buildings stand, as long as there is a parliament, whether it be 10 years or 1,000, you will be here, the embodiment of conscience, biting your lips, gripping the dais, refusing to yield.
So it was that a Bill of Rights was passed in Canada more than a century ago, and more than a century before such rights were granted in other nations and upon other continents. A bill passed because of a seed sown by Ezekiel Hart that took 33 years to blossom. But perhaps that passage of time is not to be contemplated as men do in thoughtful sorrow. After all, the seed does finally blossom, if it be seed of decent purpose, and if it be planted with patience and everlasting determination. It's just that, whether it be the fruit of the broad Andalusian plain, or the fine, tall timber of the high Sierras, the good things are a long time coming.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Wilfred Shushat of Congregation Shar HaShemayim in Montreal, Canada. Rabbi Shushat.
More than a century has elapsed since Ezekiel Hart laid the basis for the security of Jewish citizenship rights in Canada. Since that time, the Confederation of Canada has confirmed these rights not only for its Jewish citizens, but for all minority groups. Jewish names have played an honorable role in the federal and provincial parliaments. in municipal affairs, in the judiciary, in the armed services, and in the business and social life of Canada. Furthermore, the annals of Canada's Jews have confirmed the basic premise of Jewish history that freedom once achieved must be dedicated to God's service. Thus it is that wherever Jews have settled in Canada, they have brought with them the traditions of Judaism, the tradition of Jewish learning, of Jewish giving, and of Jewish piety. Wherever Jews congregate themselves into a minyan, there you will find communal institutions dedicated to God, to Israel, and to Torah. These spiritual advancements were made possible by the political struggle first begun by Ezekiel Hart and his generation, and confirmed by the democratic foundations that unite Jews in Canada with their French-speaking and English-speaking neighbors. Canada stands today upon the threshold of its greatest voyage of self-discovery. All the evidence at our disposal seems to indicate that the next generation will witness the great untapping of the vast natural resources of this blessed land. In the face of such a challenge, there is no greater task facing the Canadian Jewish community than to deepen its Jewish roots so that it may produce more abundant Canadian fruits and thus strengthen the spiritual dimension of the nation. In this way, the struggle for the achievement of Jewish rights will have reached the fullness of its blessing.
Thank you, Rabbi Shushat. Our eternal eye drama today, The Ghost Who Sat in Parliament, was written by Howard Merrill. Stotz Cotsworth was featured as Ezekiel and Anne Burr as his wife Esther. Leon Janney as Bedar, with John Stanley as Richardson. Gavin Gordon was the chairman, Ivor Francis the editor, Burford Hampton the clerk, and Roger DeCoven was the narrator. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Momorsky. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.